What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Gavin McLaughlin with you on News Talk's Taking Stock, and we're joined now by Stuart Clark, Deputy Editor of Hot Press. Stuart, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to start by giving you a statistic from the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry. They say that in 2020, revenue for recorded music was the highest it has been since 2002, coming in at $21.6 billion. But yet at the same time, we're always hearing how streaming doesn't work for artists. So what gives?
It's a lot of money, but not enough is going to the content creators, the artists. What we've seen over the last 10 or 15 years, maybe 20 years, is a land grab away from the performers.
The way Spotify says they do it is they kind of have a pot of money that is set aside for artists, and subscription revenue goes in, ad revenue goes in, and it's divvied out according to the percentage of streams. So if you get 90% of the streams, you get 90% of this pot that they've created. Isn't that fair enough? If you're a big artist, maybe you should be getting a bit more.
It's a lot of money for Ed Sheeran and Billie Eilish, I know. But 0.004 of a cent is the average royalty. So my maths is bad, but 25,000 streams to make €100. And sometimes not even that. I think what happened was a lot of artists made their deals in the pre-digital days, and they've not really been updated. I mean, Peter Frampton, a rather wrinkly 70s rocker, but he sold a lot of records, testified last year in the States, 55 million streams of his massive hit Baby, I Love Your Way earned him a princely $1,700, which is not very good.
That's
bang
not
for
a lot.
Songwriting buck.
But is that a reflection that he's just done a bad deal with his record company? Because, you know, I was talking there about the pot going to artists. It's obviously not that simple. There's record companies involved, etc., etc. So maybe these people have just been caught out by the nature of their record deal.
That is very possible. You do wonder why Peter and his lawyers and his accountants have tolerated that, because this track dates back, as they say, to the 70s. It does accumulate. And some artists say that over a period of time, it kind of works for them. I think what happened was a really bright light was shone on Spotify during COVID, because as part of a balanced diet, when bands are out playing gigs and selling T-shirts and vinyl at the gig and making money that way, it's good promotion maybe. When it was the only game in town, that was the only income, you saw the stark lack for artists who are, I wouldn't say cottage industries, that's a bit of an insult, but are at the lower end of the rung. And I think we've got to just dismiss this fact that if you're in the top 20, you're making a fortune. I won't mention the name of the band, but an Irish band who'd had top 20 hits in the UK and around the world were playing at Mount Fuji, big festivals, middle of the afternoon, but they're travelling a long way to play to quite a few people. And I asked them, what are you earning? A bit of a rude question, but they answered about 17 grand a year. That's a chart band for you. So, you know, being on top of the pops or being in the top 20 does not mean you're a millionaire with a carp farm or a big sprawling estate. You know, it's really hard nowadays to make money. And for somebody like, say, Luca Bloom, who released his Bittersweet Crimson album the old-fashioned way on CD and vinyl only, Spotify just did not make sense. So he was saying, for some people, this works and fine. I'm not saying the model is bad for everybody, but for me, it just doesn't pan out. So he did the old-fashioned thing on the kitchen table, stuffing CDs and vinyl into cardboard mailers. And instead of getting a fraction of what the cost of the record was worth or the songs were worth, you know, he was making his kind of €15 per CD and piece of vinyl.
He kind of went back to the old model, and clearly it worked in this case. I mean, you would hope that as more and more people listen on Spotify and as its revenue goes up, the pot of money that gets distributed should go up in tandem with that. And then, you know, even if you're only a small percentage of the total streams, the money you're getting should be a little bit higher. But I think, Stuart, it is fair to say that over the last 10 or 15 years, touring and merchandise, they've become much more important in terms of the proportion of a band's income.
Even for a big band like U2, the record is almost a loss leader now. I think I saw somewhere that their gross income over a year, about 5 to 10%, is on vinyl or cassette or whatever. You know, it is a loss leader. The Kronas spoke about, you know, having to play live to pay for the records. Now it's self-perpetuating. You have a chart record, you're on the radio, you sell more concert tickets. But the actual physical album itself is no longer a money spinner for bands. And it is really down to the merchandise. I've stood in Whelan's and seen artists. They've got a small merch booth in the corner selling 200 pieces of vinyl in one night with maybe a 10 euro profit. That's as much as they're making for playing the gig. And this is why, one of the many reasons actually, that British bands are freaking, because under the terms of Brexit, it's virtually impossible for, say, Maximo Park, who make most of their money from merch. I mentioned them, so I was talking to them the other day. They're saying that actually going to continental Europe makes no sense for them anymore because they won't be able to take their merch, or it'll be so taxed, it'll be beyond the reach of most of their fans. So they're probably not going to be able to tour in Europe unless they're losing money on the deal.
Our guest here on News Talk is Stuart Clark, Deputy Editor of Hot Press. You mentioned, Stuart, you know, some of these various bands here. It's kind of taking place in the context where I almost feel like rock and roll is dead. You know, these indie bands, you know, that segment of music, it's not as popular as it used to be. What do you think of that proposition?
I think it's as popular. You only have to look at how quickly 70,000 or 80,000 tickets for the Electric Picnic are snapped up. People want to see the Fontaines DC. They want to see Billie Eilish. They want to see their heritage acts. You know, Snow Patrol are still a major draw. Ed Sheeran, you know, is selling out Croke Park. The Stones can still do it. So it's 20-year-olds and nearly 80-year-olds.
But it doesn't have the cultural cachet that rap and dance music have, you know, whereas maybe 10, 20 years ago was different.
I would say that all those, what, sort of 27 million people who bought the last Adele album think she has great cultural cachet. You could argue that, you know, innovation-wise, there's more innovation sonically in rap these days than rock and or roll. That's because you've got an art form that is now, what, 70, 80 years old. And how do you innovate? It's probably just redefining the art, whereas rap is, you know, younger and perhaps still finding its feet relatively. So, you know, live music is very, very buoyant. What has emerged actually as a sort of a source of income very much for bands at the lower end of the earnings rung during lockdown is Bandcamp, and that has been a saviour. I'm not saying it's paying a great wage, but, you know, artists who've been unable to tour can make maybe 10 or 15 grand a year from Bandcamp. The model there is that you sell direct to the fan with usually, I think, about a 10 to 15% commission for Bandcamp, which is not a huge amount compared to Amazon, who take a much bigger share of the pie. But every sort of fourth Friday, it's a Bandcamp Friday, and there is no sort of commission at all. And just an example, Dublin singer Patrick M. Barrett says he made more from Bandcamp in 12 weeks than he did in 5 years from Spotify, which he calls a chocolate teapot, and he's not alone.
Is it fair to say, I mean, obviously, first of all, I should say it's great to see things like this emerge, and it's like Patreon and things like that. There are kind of these new tools, if you like, for creative people to make money. Whether they match up to what was there before is yet to be seen, but at least there is some innovation in that sense. But I wanted to ask you about innovation in the musical sense, and particularly the format of the album. I've seen it suggested that if you want to make money now from sort of the recorded music, the way to go really is just to keep cranking out singles all the time rather than
on Spotify,
you know, doing an album every 3 or 4 years.
The algorithm is more clumps of tracks, doing acoustic versions, you know, special kind of add-ons, that kind of a thing. It's not massive, but vinyl is at its highest rate sales-wise in 20 or 30 years, I think 10 or 15%. It's not going to save the industry, but as a luxury product now, it's been rebranded as a luxury product, what, 27, 28 euro per piece of vinyl. It's definitely helping quite a few bands to just keep afloat. So, you know, it's interesting. Ever since I was a kid, something has been killing off music. You know, cassettes, too much radio airplay. Now, one thing, you know, we can't uninvent technology. You know, complaining about, oh, we're not selling 30 million records anymore and all people can turn it on like a tap and get free music. You can't uninvent that. If one good thing has come out of lockdown for the arts, it's people are beginning to understand that paying $9.99 a month for Spotify is not enough. My mother-in-law, who, yes, has a vested interest and listens to me on the radio, actually said, I read somewhere that artists aren't making enough money, that being played on the radio or me listening on Spotify isn't giving them a living. But if I buy a T-shirt, if I get a wavy hand or I go to their gig, they're getting that money into their pocket. And it was interesting the other day talking to Minister Catherine Martin. I think the government's response was very slow to the crisis. I think she has got her head around it pretty well. And she says we have to place an everyday value on music. And what she is advocating and will be piloted soon is, I think, a 3-year pilot basic income scheme for artists and arts workers. That's been Green Party policy since their first meeting in Ireland for a universal wage. They're going to start by piloting it now for artists. And I'm really glad that we're placing value. I've had artists cry to me because, unlike a plumber, what they do has no fiscal value. They're told the E word will give you exposure. Well, I'm sorry, you can't go to the butcher and pay for 5 pork chops with exposure or pay your mortgage. So this idea of brands using groups for exposure, and this is really good for you. And in a way, Spotify, to a degree, say, look, you're on our playlists. This is great exposure. Don't get me wrong. Spotify actually do some very good work with their playlists. They're incredibly well put together. A lot of young artists get their first real meaningful exposure courtesy of Spotify playlists that alert people to their music. And they go on to get a lot of hits and a lot of streams on Spotify and maybe make a living from it. But I don't think that alone justifies this 0.004% royalty rate.
Yeah, well, this idea of exposure and finding a new generation is something that gets thrown into this whole area of publishing rights. And it's something where we've seen a lot of the bigger artists at the top end kind of deciding, actually, they're going to sell their publishing rights, their royalties for writing a song, sell these to big funds. One of these funds is called Hypnosis, Stuart. And if you just look at the share price, it's doing very well. They've upped their dividend this week and they expect revenues to continue to grow. They said in a statement earlier this week, they say, going forward, this accelerated streaming will be enhanced as revenues from TikTok, Peloton, Triller, Roblox and other rapidly emerging digital platforms start to be paid through. We are entering an era where now, for the first time ever, almost all consumption of music is paid for. What do you make of
that? Well, virtually every record deal these days, a major one anyhow, is a 360 deal, which means you're not just signing, you know, for music, but your website, for your merchandise. You know, you have somebody coming in and exploiting every facet. In America, definitely, there is no such thing as a free ticket, even for people like myself reviewing a gig. Every ticket is paid for. Funnily enough, the person who sort of first had the idea of leasing his back catalogue for exploitation was way ahead of his time in so many ways, was David Bowie and the Bowie Bonds. But now it's become quite common for the likes of, you know, Dylan. I think he's just sold his rights rather than leasing them. Bowie said you can have them for a certain amount of time, then I get them back. Now, there is a danger that your classic tune that you sweated buckets over and hold very dear becomes a sausage commercial. But that's the price you pay by, you know, supping with the devil.
Yeah, some of the sums on offer are absolutely incredible, you know, and I suppose good for these guys, but it doesn't do much for the people at the other end of the industry who we've been talking about. Last thing I want to put to you is an alternative model that I've seen suggested for Spotify to what they have now. And the idea is basically that you analyze it per user, certainly on the premium subscriptions anyway. So, for example, Stuart, I pay Spotify a tenner a month, right? But under the current model, that tenner goes into the pot and it's divvied out pro rata. So Ed Sheeran gets some of my tenner, even though I never listen to Ed Sheeran. So some people might say, well, look, Gavin listens to New Order or he listens to The Lads. They're the ones who should get his tenor rather than having this common pot.
Well, I think what I would say to that is that we're talking about Spotify as being everlasting. You know, 10 years ago, we'd have had this conversation. It was iTunes.
Yeah.
We'd have said MySpace. Technology moves all the time and someone might come along with a better, more favourable service. There's a small one in the UK, SonStream, offering around 3 cents a stream for the actual track you play. No subscription, you pay for the music as you go. I like the sound of that. Unfortunately, rivals to Spotify have been rather short-lived and unsuccessful. I would like to think that they would meet the industry halfway. They would look at their royalty rate. I'm looking forward, by the way, there's an extremely good book by two Swedish journalists that will make your hair curl called Spotify Untold. And a fictionalized version is coming soon to Netflix. And that'll give you a lot of background to what has been a remarkable success story in business terms. Quite remarkable. But yeah, as I say, I'm not trying to demonize them. They do lots of good work in terms of their playlists. I just think that it's not balanced. Certainly not the acts towards the bottom of the food chain. And when Taylor Swift, who admitted that, you know, I'm a multi-billionaire, was holding out over her own albums, one of the things she kept on saying was, it's not really me that we should be worrying about. It's more the 13 or 14-year-old me who got plucked from obscurity. There was money to invest in me before I'd actually sold any records or had an audience. And I'm not sure, she said, and I'd agree, that those 13 or 14-year-olds or bands in their garage will have as bigger chance of being nurtured as the previous generation of bands were. You know, if we want the next U2, there has to be investment down the food chain. And I'm not sure that money is getting to younger acts in quite the same way as it was in the 80s and 90s.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Stuart Clark, Hot Press Deputy Editor. Stuart, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.